for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to March, everybody. Today is March 2nd, 2021, and today's guest is Nick Cohealy from The Rise Hunt. All right, welcome to the Fall Podcast. I am your host, Aaron Blasey, and today is episode 149. Now, that's a lot of episodes. It's been great. I love all the support. Thank you, everybody out there. I want to get that out there right away. But I do want to kind of do a little brief synopsis of what today's podcast is. Now, today I have a return guest, Nick Cohealy from Michigan, on. Now, Nick is a grinder. He grinds it out until the last straw, like till the bell rings, man. He is grinding it out each year. If he doesn't have a tag punch, he's going to do whatever he can, you know, within legal rights to get that tag punch, but he is a grinder. Today's story is all about his late season Ohio hunt. He ended up killing a really good buck, his best buck to date, late season, like end of January. So it's really cool to hear the story. He, you know, lives in Michigan, but he commutes every weekend down there to, you know, possibly get two sits in. That's about it. So it's a really cool story. We dive into a lot of stuff of, you know, what he was doing late season and what helped him and what worked for him. So it's pretty cool. But that's basically what today's podcast is. Before we get into the interview, though, I do want to talk about, you know, before, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I kind of told everybody that we're going to have some new merch coming out. It is coming. I'm trying to get everything finalized right now. It's a slow process with the COVID stuff going on and getting, you know, the shirts and the hoodies and everything. I'm trying to get samples right now, and I should have samples this week. And trying to get those finalized because I want to make sure everything is top notch for everybody out there. I'm getting a lot of inquiries right now about like where they can buy it, where they can see it and everything. Just hold tight real quick. I will update you guys as soon as everything goes live, but I'm hoping here very soon, you know, within March here. And what I'm going to do is I want to do a pre-order. So what I'm going to do is probably run a pre-order for a certain amount of time. Let's just call it a month. So everybody can go there, order everything. I can get exactly what everybody wants. And then once that day hits the end of the pre-order, I'm just going to get everything made and then ship it out from there. So that's how I'm going to start it. But then if everybody wants to order, you know, something onesie twosies kind of thing, I'll have something through Instagram and Facebook that we can do because I don't have a website. I don't feel like I need a website. I don't have a use for it. I think it's just, for me right now, what I'm doing, I think it's a waste of money. So I don't want to put my money into it right now. So I'm going to have a way to have people order stuff off of Instagram and Facebook and emailing me and everything, whatever you want. You'll be able to see all the selections of everything that I have, and then we'll get everything going that way. So that's going to kind of how I kind of run it for right now, but that's the best I can do just because I really don't want to sink a whole bunch of money into a website and I don't have time for it. So I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of upkeep and, you know, I just don't see a need for it right now. So, but I do appreciate everybody reaching out and all the support and, you know, wanting to order stuff right now. It's coming. I will let you guys know when it is live so everybody can see that. So thank you very much. I guess with that being said, I'm going to get over this interview with Nick, and yeah, that's it. Thank you guys. All right. Welcome back to the Fall Podcast. And today, another return guest, Nick Cohealy from the Rise Hunt. Nick, welcome to the podcast, man. And before you say thanks for having me on, because I know that's what you're going to go with, but before you say that, I just want to say that I'm very pissed at you, and I'm very jealous of you right now.
Hey, you know, it's taken me like 2 deer to come up to equal up to your one, so.
No, let's go back a little bit here. You know, the last 2 years, you've killed 5 bucks, right?
Yeah.
So you've killed 3 in Michigan, 3 slammers in Michigan, by the way, 3 no slouches, and 2 really good deer out of state, so I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it from you at all. Honestly, I'm not jealous of your taxidermy bill. I will say that.
that's a rough one.
What's going on, man? I'm glad you could come on.
Oh, you know, obviously, you know, thanks for always having me. You know, we're excited, just living the high life right now at this point. So
you are living the high life, and you know, I had you on before. If anybody wants to listen to that first one, go back. It's episode 92, I believe. And it was about your season, your 2019 season, where you killed 2 great Michigan bucks. And that was a great episode too. But I think in that episode, I prefaced that you might be the luckiest person that I know, but I don't mean that in a bad way. You grinded out more, you and Alex, by the way. I mean, you guys grinded out more than anybody I know of. And kudos to you, man, because I was just telling you before record, you know, my dad told me when I was little, I was like, you know, I always stuck with me. It's like, no matter what you do, the more time you put in it, the more you get out of it. And you are living proof of that.
Yeah, I mean, I always, you know, I'm just going to say I'm lucky as what it boils down to. Right, right spot, right time, you know, but, you know, you put yourself out there enough times, you know, sooner or later, it's all going to work together for you. And, you know, at least you hope, but, you know, Alex has been ahead, you know, he's been doing just as much as I have. And I mean, he's had a rough go the last 2 years, but he's also kind of like on a new stepping stone compared to me, versus I'm like, oh yeah, 3.5 go, we'll take him.
I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you, man. Yeah,
he's also killed a giant. And I mean, so he got lucky. And I don't want to say lucky. He worked his ass off for that dude too. So
yeah, but he for sure did, man. He's grinding. And you know, we're recording this on early February, I don't know when it's going to go live yet. It could be this week, could be 3 weeks from now, I don't know. But you, we're going to talk as we are today, early February. So you killed the best buck of your life, right?
Yep.
2 weekends ago, the 24th of January, right?
Yep.
Okay, so down in Ohio, you grinded it out. Now, kind of what I want to talk about today is, I've killed a couple pretty good deer in Missouri in January in the past, and I love late season hunting, and I want to kind of get into that with you because you've killed your 2 best deer. I think last year would have been your biggest deer, right, until this year?
I would say biggest deer, but when you look at number-wise, he wasn't, but
okay.
You're comparing a 10 to basically an 8-point, so
sure.
You know, apples to apples on that one.
Right. Well, 2 really good deer, let's just put it that way, in January. Yeah. So I thought it'd be cool to kind of compare and contrast and see what you're doing and kind of like compare to what I did, because I think, you know, the thought out there is like, and it is true, I'm not trying to go against it at all, but like, you know, late season, it's get on the food, you know, get where the more concentrated areas are, get on the food. And, you know, a lot of people just hunt evenings. I won't lie to you, like in the late season in January and stuff like that, it's hard for me to get out in the mornings. And I think you might sometimes be doing more harm than good unless you have that perfect scenario. So
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so coming into January, now I do want to just brush on that you killed a really good deer in Michigan this year as well. Like, it was he your best Michigan deer?
No, he's
well,
he's
see, just a good, solid one. Yeah, exactly. just another one to another notch in the belt.
Yeah, another taxidermist bill, as you said.
Oh no, but yeah. you killed one early October, right?
Yep, October 2nd.
Yeah, must be nice. Yeah.
Hey, that was a long time between October 2nd and January 24th.
Hell yeah.
That's a long time in between.
Hell yeah, it is. So coming into January, I guess, like let's get it out there first. So let's lay out the property. You know, is it private? Is it public? Like, what is that situation? And, you know, let's go from there.
So it's all private. It's random as it is. I ran into a buddy. I mean, you think I'm 30 years old. So it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I was on a hunting forum, met this guy on there. And then he reaches out to me. We were talking about turkey hunting at the time and then talking to him and whatnot. And then he's like, hey, you know, come down to Ohio, come and hunt Ohio. Just talking with him on the phone one time, I was like, all right, he's got a good deer down there type thing. And, you know, little did I know that was going to come into, you know, one of the best friendships ever. I mean, he's mid-50s, and I'm some young kid, as, you know, some people think. But
yep.
Me and him just click, and, you know, we've gone to Wyoming together, Manitoba. You know, I've hunted down Ohio with him. It's just one of those random things. Never met the guy in person until, you know, the time I went down there. And, you know, I can't thank him enough. And he's, you know, bent over backwards for me as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, for him to give the invite for me to come down there and hunt is huge. And then, you know, then I go and kill my biggest deer because of him. So I gotta give Matt the shout out on that one, you know.
Hell yeah, man. So is this the first year you've deer hunted down there then, or have you hunted in there in the past?
No, I've hunted there in the past. So I think it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I killed a buck down there during their muzzleloader season, which was January again. But I didn't hunt down there. I think the last 2 years I didn't hunt Ohio, and then this year I went back down there. So where he lives, he actually has a 120 acre or 180 acre farm that he lives on. So, but he typically doesn't hunt there because he's got all these other properties that are just that much better.
I got you.
Yeah. So he pretty much gave me free range at his home farm there. And, you know, it was pretty, I'm not going to complain with 180 acres in Ohio.
Hell yeah, man. So 180 acres, what does it consist of? Is it mainly ag, wooded fence rows, big timber? Like, what do you got?
So for the most part, it's mainly ag. I mean, he's got some thicker fence rows. There's a couple little pockets here or there that are, you know, that are wooded and whatnot, but it's like honeysuckle down there is pretty much all you're getting for the most part. I mean, it's overtaken his farm there. So, I mean, you got honeysuckle and ag fields, but, luckily enough, the farmer down there is kind of one of one of those hack farmers where he doesn't get his crops out until later on, which is perfect for us deer hunters. I mean,
yep. and if everybody out there listening that likes to bait, I mean, I like to bait. Ohio, you can bait. You know what I mean? Anywhere that you can throw a little gold nugget down, I'm good with that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I know a lot of people that kind of cringe over it. And to be honest, like me, it's, you know, it's not my preferred way to hunt, but it's definitely a way to, you know, when you're hunting some bigger areas like that, it's definitely a way to concentrate them deer into one specific spot, hopefully.
For sure.
You know, I mean, when you have freaking, you know, 100 acres of corn, cut corn out there, you know how it is. It can be kind of tricky to get them to close into that bow range or working gun range. So
yeah, for sure. Now, did you hunt this at all during the fall? Like, you know, rut time, October, any time in there? Or did you mainly plan on like late season? I'm going to hit this hard.
So I went down there during the summer, you know, obviously just go see him and stuff. And then, you know, I kind of built the game plan that I was going to go down there. But I didn't make my first trip down to Ohio until November 20th.
Okay.
Which is, you know, our gun season came in here. And, you know, I was hunting. I killed that one buck on the second, but then I was really targeting another one. And I just kind of put all my efforts in on him until the gun season came around. And, you know, once gun season comes around in Michigan, your odds go down pretty hard. So that's when I just transitioned over to Ohio.
I gotcha. So then when you went down in November, I mean, did you have any cameras out? Did you get any beads on any bucks? Or, you know, what was it starting to shape up? What was it looking like? Was there some good deer there?
Yeah, so when I had some cameras down there, and his boy, actually, we had a couple 10 points showing up, and his boy ended up shooting one during kind of that latter part of October. And then, honestly, the other one, I went down there November 20th, the very first morning sit, I saw a slammer, but he was at 300 yards. And I believe it's actually the buck that my buddy Matt ended up killing at his farm a mile up the road like a month later. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was pretty crazy, you know.
Okay.
Like, yeah, we get the, you know, the buck was showing up on camera, and then next thing you know, he's FaceTiming me one day. They got a little bit of snow, and he went up there and he's FaceTiming me. I'm like, holy crap, that's one-eyed Willie. You know,
it's like. Wow. It, and he shot him a mile away?
Yep, he's got a farm that's a mile straight north of his farm. So I was like, that's pretty crazy that, you know.
Yep. Did you think a doe took him up there, or, you know, was that just kind of his loop?
I'm assuming probably a doe or something. I mean, honestly, we're not even 100% sure. But, you know, I figured deer, a mile is really nothing for deer to cover.
No,
but,
yep.
I mean, it was kind of weird that all October we were getting, you know, October and beginning of November, we were getting pictures of him fairly consistent, and then next thing you know, here he is. He shows up at the farm a mile up the road. It's like, huh.
But, wow. How big was he?
He ended up going 164.
Wow.
So he just a mainframe 10 with he had a split brow, like a good split brow. And that deer, I remember I listened to one of your podcasts, it's funny because they were talking about the front teeth. You guys were talking about the front teeth. There was just none there, and that's kind of same scenario as his was. I mean, there was just no teeth on his front.
Really? Did now that so that the buck that you're referring to, if anybody hasn't heard it, it's my Kansas buck that I killed this year with my gun. And when I was caped him out, literally you could run your fingers, his lower front teeth, you could run your fingers over his gum and not feel anything.
Yeah.
And that was like crazy. And, you know, I got his teeth out enough, hopefully, but I just sent him in like 2 weeks ago to go get him aged. I'm hoping they can age him, but like that's the first time I've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah, I'll be super curious on what you get back on that one.
Yeah, I just recorded a podcast with Jeremy Beck and from Wisconsin, and he asked me, he's like, what do you think he was? And I'm like, I mean, we had a lot of history with that deer the year before. Honestly, and you just can't tell. Like, you can have a good guess. Like, sometimes you might get it right, but like, man, it is so hard to judge deer on the hoof. And his pictures from the year before, honestly, he only looked four to me. And I say only four, but he only looked like 4 years old. And then, you know, I kill him, and then we cape him out and everything, and I'm like, wow, no teeth. Like, never ever once heard of that in the front teeth, and I've never seen it. So I'm like, I don't know, he could be old, but I just, you know, the Hambino was 7.5 and he had great front teeth, you know, not great, but you know what I mean, like he had front teeth. It's like, gosh, I don't know, maybe he just had some dental issues, I guess.
Yeah, I thought, I remember you said mentioned something that I can't remember if it was you, like your guys there or who you were talking to at the time, but I got all the salt blocks, like the cow salt blocks and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
That's what the guy at the butcher shop said. He's like, you know, there's a lot of, it's cattle ground. So he's like, a lot of salt and deer can get in the salt and, you know, basically kill their teeth or whatnot. And I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. Be nice to know. I don't know. If anybody out there has seen this a lot and you hunt in cattle country, please write in or let me know. Like, I'd like to know if it was just a defect the deer had, or I don't know. I really don't know how he ate anything unless it was to his side, obviously. So, anyway, back down that rabbit hole. Back to this. Here we go. So, deer scored 164-ish. You know, not a bad deer.
That's
all right. Yeah, exactly. But I feel like, you know, watching Instagram and everything and kind of talking to you every once in a while through text and everything, the trips you were making down there, I mean, you were seeing good bucks just about every time, weren't you?
No,
Oh, you were? No, okay, so you actually, you're just leading on, you know, a different perception. Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I went down, like I said, November 20th was the first time I went down there. I saw that slammer that morning, and realistically, after that, I mean, it was nothing for me to go down there and not see a single deer, pretty much.
Really?
You know, there's a couple times where, you know, we had a couple decent bucks, because, like, probably the weekend after that or something, but a couple decent bucks, but not that really was itching me hard, so... and then I guess it would have been probably right there in the middle. December 20th was about when it all started, or right around that time frame. We started getting pictures across the street from his house. It's basically just field over there, and a tree line. So I put some food over there, a camera over there, and we started getting pictures of a buck that we call Split GQ, which is actually a buck that my buddy Matt has sheds from 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And then last year he wasn't able to find the sheds, but he was able to, he videoed the deer during the latter part of the season.
Okay.
So we started getting pictures of him, and pretty much right down there, that's kind of where my focus went, because I mean, he's at least probably 6 or 7 or who knows how old, but
okay.
just a slammer of a deer pretty much.
Yep. So you said it's all field with a wood ed, or like a wooded fence row. So like what was that field? Was it standing crops or?
So at the time, half of it was cut beans, which these beans, it was probably about 6-inch stubble, but there was pods everywhere.
Yep.
On half of it. And then the other half was standing corn.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm thinking, okay, standing corn, I know this farmer doesn't get stuff out till later on. Like, this is perfect.
Yep.
But unfortunately, a couple weeks later, he cut the corn on us.
Now, you're getting consistent pictures of this deer, but are they daylight? Are they dark? Like, what are they? Are you getting any sort of pattern on them?
No, I would get pictures almost every single night, but it was all after dark, after dark, after dark. So
okay.
It wasn't, yeah.
So now do you, when you're getting those pictures, are you thinking like, well, obviously he's not living on me, you know, and I'm just like, you know, what do you do with that? Because I've been in that scenario, like it's a head game, man. It's like dark, 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 and you know he's not living on you. You're just like a destination, and it's like, I don't know, what do you do? If you can't really get on the neighbors, like how do you do it?
So the only thing that I had going for me that kept me like actually persistent is because the fact of the history that my buddy Matt had with that, you know, even this is a Split GQ buck that we're talking about at the time,
yep.
You know, and just the history that he had, that he has with him. And, you know, we knew once it got later on in the year that there's the odds of him showing up in daylight were better just because he's seen them. He's videoed them for the last couple of years out there. So we knew it was just, as longer it went in the season, the more you know, the odds were for us, him showing up in daylight. And obviously, too, as the season goes on, you know, it's staying daylight longer and longer, too. So I knew that would kind of help out. But in a sense, you know, not having any daylight pictures, it was just kind of almost a waiting game and just praying every time you went down there.
Right. Yeah. So he was living on the neighbors, you think, then?
Oh, yeah, he was 100%.
Okay, so what was the neighbors like? Was it like all standing timber? Like, what was their property kind of like?
So from where I was on, I was literally hunting the property boundaries, which, you know, some people frown upon, but no one hunts the neighbor's property. But,
okay.
So on one side of the fence was all our crops. The other side was, it was cattle pasture for about, I'd say it's probably about a 5 to 6 acre cattle pasture field.
Okay.
So there was about 200 yards, you know, across the cattle pasture. And then on the other side of the cattle pasture is where these bucks were living, which is all just like thick brush, overgrown, like grasses and all that. Just perfect bedding area, basically.
Yep.
Like, so.
Now, were you ever glassing this buck at all, like from a distance and, you know, trying to get a bead on him? Or were you like, I'm going to get in the stand and just, you know, hope and pray and see what the hell happens.
that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it was kind of in a landlocked, like where you really can't get from an area and actually glass those areas.
I mean,
the best vantage point you had was from the tree stand that I was hunting out of.
Okay.
And, so, you know, I was pretty much just sitting there and and hoping and praying is really what all it was. I mean, during the muzzleloader season, for the Ohio muzzleloader season didn't come in until I think like the 1st or 2nd of January this year.
Yep.
And so I went down there Friday would have been the 1st. I went down there and the wind was kind of iffy. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go. And it was warm. So I was like, one of our other bordering neighbors on the other side of the farm had winter wheat. So I figured late season, warm, green. I was like, okay. So I went sat over there, didn't see a single deer. And then Matt calls me, you know, when I get back to the house, Matt tells me that the buck I actually ended up killing was out in that field during daylight.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's funny to kind of go back before we go forward here, how mm-hmm. I said, like, you know, when you're the end of the deer's destination, you know, I that doesn't make any sense what I just said. Holy crap. I don't know what I just said there.
I get what you're trying to
say. when I was talking about like pictures after dark and daylight, and when you're, you know, the deer's not betting on you and you know, what's going through your head, it just made me think of two different scenarios that I had out of state. In January, a year apart, one day almost. So it was on January 13th one year, and then January 14th. So I killed two bucks on those days, a year apart. And one was just this scenario. Like the food was actually on the neighbors. I was a little patch of timber that was basically a funnel, with a ditch in it, where the deer were popping out. So I was kind of picking the deer off as they were going to the neighbors. And I killed one that way. But the next year, I went back. It was a different farm. But I first sat on the destination food. And he was getting, like, this buck was getting there right at last light. And, you know, just, I filmed him one night, but it was, like, getting real dark. And I'm like, man, to get on this deer, I had the ability to go deeper. Like, figure out where he was bedding, and I had help from a friend that lived there, and it's his property and everything. He's like, I feel like I know where this deer's bedding. Let's get in there tighter. We went in there the next night, and he showed up underneath me like 40 minutes before dark. You know what I mean? And I'm like, wow. And we got an arrow in him, and it was like, you know, it's just those two different scenarios, two different styles of doing it, and that just made me think of that, like, if you have that ability to go back there and get deeper, then, you know, for sure do that. Not that, you know, anybody, if you had that ability, do that for sure.
I mean, don't let a mistake. Every day I thought about going and knock on that farmer's door and be like, I'll pay this much just to hunt, you know, 2 days over here, you know?
Yeah. Now to fast forward a little bit here. So you're in the stand, and when did you, so you said there's two bucks then. You have the G2 buck and there's another one?
Yeah, the one I actually ended up killing, yeah.
Okay, so now these two bucks, were you seeing them from the stand at all, just not getting any opportunities?
So it would have been the weekend before I killed him is the very first time I laid eyes on them.
Okay, run me through that weekend.
Okay, so that weekend, Saturday, you know, because obviously I'm going down there, hunt Saturday, Sunday, and driving back, going to work. So I went down there Saturday. I was like, oh, it's going to snow, and as soon as I got in the stand, it just started snowing. And by the time, like, you know, it was almost dark, there was snow all over the ground, which I'm like, perfect. Finally, late season weather that you want, you know. Other than that, it's been 40, you know, 30s, 40s, something like that, and no snow, which is horrible for late season as far as I'm concerned. But that's just been the scenario the last couple of years. But so anyways, Saturday I had a buck come in that we had pictures of pretty frequently too. And he was a big frame. He's a barely a 10 point, but just a big frame on him, probably mid 120s. And he come in right at last light on me, and I was just, it's like you're getting the latter part of the season, and you know, after how many, that would have been trip number 6 down there. I'm like, and I let him go.
Yeah.
So I go back to the house, and I tell my buddy Matt that I passed him up. And he's like, why? Why'd you do that? You know, like, I was like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the back of my head, it's like, I know how consistent the mother bucks were. And I was just like, you can't kill, I mean, throw numbers out there. You can't kill 160 unless you're if your deer could shoot them mid-120s.
Right, right.
So anyways, that was Saturday. Got tested with that one. And then Sunday, I go out there, and it's kind of miserable out still. All the snow melted overnight, so there's no snow. And then it was just kind of that wet, drizzly, whatever you want to call them, that just nasty stuff.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I look over, and there's one. I look across the cow pasture, which is 200 yards across the cow pasture, and there's one, like, there's an fence line over there, and there's one opening in it. And then I can see kind of CCRP grass. I look over and I just kind of look. I'm like, yeah, that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
Pull up the binos, and I just see the split G2 buck and the one that, and the clean, we call them clean 10.
Yep.
I just see them, and all I see is just giant frame after giant frame right in a line with each other. And it's just one of the most beautiful sights you ever see. But it's like, being that I'm filming and self-filming, I'm like, all right, pull the binos up. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I'm literally trying to get, like, wrap the camera around behind me to get, you know, try to get a second of footage. And I remember getting like 2 seconds of footage, split D2. And then they ended up kind of going back, you know, behind the brush where I got out of that opening where I couldn't see them. And this was, like, an hour before dark. So I'm like, oh, I got plenty of time. This might actually happen is what I'm thinking.
Are they coming your way?
They were, at the time, they were coming, like, directly towards me.
Okay.
So at that time, I'm like, oh, they're right there at that opening. They're going to jump that fence, come across that cow pasture. Like, I'm thinking, like, this may actually happen. So I end up watching them, like, kind of through the thickness of, you know, the fence row. And so I happened to look over there, and I watched them literally until dark. Just feeding on the other side. So once as soon as dark hit, I'm like, I need to get the heck out of here before they decide that they actually want to come over. So yep. I'm like 10 minutes before dark, starting to pack up all my camera gear, just like get the heck out of here at that point. But it's just, even just laying the eyes on for that for the very first time, it gave me so much more hope that like there's a chance. Yep. You know.
So then coming out of that weekend, you knew you were gonna come back the next weekend, right?
Oh yeah. I pretty much at that point, you know, I mean, I already had it planned, but even after that one, I was like, I'll be down there every week until season goes out or I kill one or two.
Yep. So now you had a camera out here. Was it a cell cam? Are you getting pictures while you're at home?
Yep. It was a cell camera. So, I mean, I would say it's probably about 45 minutes after dark, I started getting pictures of them, you know,
all the time, like every day.
Yeah, I get pictures of them every day, pretty much, almost every day.
But just all after dark?
Yep.
Oh, man. And that oh, that just sucks. But I agree with what you said earlier, you know, like, as it gets later in the season, you know they're going to get a little more lazy, usually, mm-hmm. and just like, they might, you know, and it could be just a little front that just gets them up 10 minutes early and gets them over to you 10 minutes, you know, before that.
Yeah. That's all you need. It's just that 10 minute window pretty much.
Yeah. And honestly, those two deer I was telling you about that I shot out of state, they were both happened in two different scenarios as far as like weather. One was ass cold and the other one was really cold. I mean, extremely cold for 4 days leading up to the day I killed him. The day I killed him, it went from like 20 to 60 in January. And when it went to 60 that day, the deer were moving everywhere, you know, and it was like, it was the opposite of a cold front, obviously, you know, and it's like, they were just moving all over.
No, I've had those scenarios too. I mean, even like you said, when you get them warm up, sometimes it sparks a little something. I mean, you can drive around even in the evenings this time of year. And if you have a huge warm up like that, it's like, wow, why are all these deer out?
Right.
You know?
Definitely. So now you go back down the next weekend. Run me through that weekend.
All right. So it would have been, I believe it was Friday. Like, so the camera, usually it's like, there's been pretty consistently, I would say there's probably like 9 different bucks throughout the night and that were showing up. And so
all
Friday
shooters?
Night. No. Okay. Only two of them were considered shooters.
Yep.
And so sitting there and Friday night, I really don't have anything on camera. I'm just like, okay. So then I go down and I hunt Saturday. So I don't, you know, I was driving down there Saturday morning, hunt Saturday night. Go down there and hunt Saturday, and literally, I'm like, it was cooler. It was like the coldest temps in the last 2 weeks. So it was like 32 degrees and sun's out. I'm like, okay, you know, moon was coming up early in the sky. So by the time I was in the stand, moon's like clear up in the sky.
That's perfect.
So I'm like, I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, this is kind of the perfect scenario in a way. And I didn't see a single deer. So, you know, so at that point, I'm kind of scratching my head like, okay, you know, just kind of typical thing. They'll show up later tonight. I didn't get a single picture. I had like two pictures throughout the whole night. And I'm like, well, that's kind of weird because I'm usually waking up to about 200 to 300 pictures throughout the night. I'm like, okay, that kind of sucks. You know?
Right.
So then going into Sunday, I was like, okay, well, it was kind of snow throughout the day, and but it just wasn't sticking. It was all, you know, it was just kind of wet, rainy snow. It was kind of doing that throughout the day, and then, you know, it was like 34 degrees, so it wasn't just quite enough for it to start to be freezing and sticking. So I went out and stand, and I'm kind of sitting there. I'm like, man, it feels a lot colder than what it's actually saying it is.
Yep.
Just because of, you know, the moisture in the air. So I'm sitting there, and me and my buddy Matt, just because I was kind of picking his brain on the neighbor, because the neighbor is actually the one who farms. Farms all his fields.
Yeah.
So I was kind of picking his brain on him, just kind of like, you know, because
you're gonna make the move. Like, I need to go over there and ask him.
Yeah, exactly. In the back of my head, you know, that's what I'm thinking. So I was like, kind of picking his brain a little bit about him, and there was nothing good that came about this neighbor.
Oh, really?
Basically, okay. He just kind of does some random stuff. So anyways, I'm sitting in the stand, and I happen to look over, and up on the bean side, you know, where he had, because I'm literally sitting at where the beans and the corn split.
Okay.
And so on the bean side, for whatever reason, up by the road, it's about 300 yards away, he did about a 60-yard strip of corn right along the edge of the road, which to me is good because it's kind of blocking the road from the deer, so they can feel a bit safer. But so anyways, I'm sitting there, look over, and for whatever reason, the farmer is walking through that standing corn. And I'm like, this is about an hour before dark. So I'm like, gosh, dang it. Like, what is he doing?
on your property that you're hunting?
Yes. Yes. So it's his crop. So you really can't say anything.
Right.
But being that me and my buddy Matt just had this conversation about him doing stupid stuff, I literally get on the phone. I get on the phone and I call my buddy Matt. I'm like, hey, the farmer's out walking through the standing corn. I was like, just make sure he doesn't do something stupid and come walking out here. You know, this is about an hour after dark, you know, hour before dark. And it wasn't even, I'm just kind of sitting there watching him, like, just like making sure, you know, that he doesn't start coming walking across this field for whatever reason. And I'm watching him. About 10 minutes later, I look over and I'm like, oh shit, there's a deer. And I got this 200 yards of cattle pasture. I can see no problem whatsoever.
Yep.
And this deer is already halfway across this cattle pasture. And when I look, all I see is just like, it looks like it's just staring me dead in the eye.
I hate that feeling.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I was just moving around. I'm screwed, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in a fence row. So it's like I'm looking north down the fence row and to the east and the west. It's like for me to get skylined out would be so easy, pretty much.
You look like a turd in a punch bowl.
Yeah. So I'm just like, great. Like, this deer just saw me move and I'm screwed. And so I just, you know, I'm just sitting there looking, don't even move. And then all of a sudden, like, he kind of puts his head down and starts walking again. I'm like, oh.
What is it?
And at this time, like, I can see a deer, but I can't, like, I'm not picking out antlers.
Okay.
So I'm just like, okay. So as soon as it started walking, I pulled my binos up and I'm like, okay, it's a buck. And then I actually look in front of it and there was three bucks and he was the smaller one, which is why I didn't pick up the antlers. But then in front of him was split G2 and the clean 10.
Oh God. Single file line marching down.
Yeah. So, you know, I was just like, holy crap, here we go. You know, I was like, all right, there. But then in the back of my head, I'm like, fuck, this farmer's over there walking around in the corn right now.
Like, so, okay, so let me picture this. Like, the farmer's to, let's say, you're east, you're in the middle, and then the deer are in, like, the west, and they're, like, coming at you? Like, is that how it is? Like, you're in the middle of both, the farmer and the deer?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so, farmer was the west, the deer to the east.
Okay.
And I'm facing north, and I'm just like, okay. So, the fence where I'm sitting in is pretty, like, it's probably about 20 yards wide, but it's all honeysuckle. So, you know, honeysuckle only is only growing up about 12 foot and I'm right above the honeysuckle.
Okay.
So, you know, like I said, it's a wider fence line. And, so I'm watching these deer and I'm like, okay. And I'm literally grab my bow and I can't shoot with gloves on. So I'm taking my gloves off, grab my bow. That's cold. You know what happens when you hold on to a cold bow for too long?
Oh, I hate it.
It's freaking freezing. So these deer end up hitting the fence line. When they hit the fence line, I can't see them anymore. So I'm just sitting there waiting and waiting, waiting. And then finally gets to the point where I'm like, okay, I know I need to hang my bow back up and warm my hands up.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I, you know, the last thing I want to be trying to do is make a good shot on, you know, my biggest buck of my life, either way, whichever one it is, and trying to do it when I'm freezing cold. So I sit there and hang my bow back up, and I'm just sitting there and waiting. And this is literally probably like 10 minutes. And next thing I know, I look up and the clean 10, I see him, he pops out where I can see him. And I'm like, okay, sweet. Well, at this point, they're like 200 yards away. So they were at 80 when they were coming across the cow pasture.
Okay.
And now when they pop out through the fence line, they're at 200.
That's weird. So, how did that, were they on like an angle that didn't look like it?
No, because what I'm thinking is because it's the fence line so thick with the honeysuckle, they hit the fence line and literally went straight north before they crossed.
Okay. They had to find a place to cross.
Yeah. Mindful, I got a trail that's like 10 yards from me. That's perfectly good for crossing the fence, but they want to go up, you know?
Yep.
But so the only thing I can really think of why they did that is, I mean, that night the wind was pretty calm. Like it was only like 1 or 2 mile an hour, but it was coming out of the south, southeast. So okay. They were trying to circle the downwind side.
Yep.
Is what they were doing. So anyways, clean 10 pops through. And as soon as he pops through, I look up, pull the binos on him, and he's staring at the farmer. I'm like, motherfuck, we're done. I was like, this is done. It's done all the way.
So now they're in the same field as each other, right?
Yes. And he's just staring at him. I'm like, well, here we go, you know. It was close.
Yeah.
And I did something with the camera or whatever. I just took my eyes off him for a split second. When I looked back up, he was gone. So I was like, oh, there we go. It's done. And so I'm just kind of sitting there, just kind of looking, trying to figure out where they're at type thing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening what he must have been doing is he went back towards closer to the tree line where the other bucks were. And then next thing you know, they're popping out again at like, I don't know, they closed maybe like 50 yards, but then they popped out again.
So on like, the shit. Same side of the field, like on your side. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So he just got into the line where I couldn't see him all it was really. So they popped back out. I'm like, holy shit. Like at this point I got probably 40 minutes left to play. I'm like, this might actually happen.
Yep.
Even though, you know, they're 200 yards away. I'm like, this might actually happen. So they're coming in, and I'm filming them, trying to, like, you know, just trying to put the whole process together in my head, you know, getting ready. They get to about 100 yards, and I look down, and my camera says SD card full.
Oh!
Yeah.
Complete panic mode.
Yeah, for a split second, I'm like, all right, fuck the camera.
Yep, that's what I said. Sorry, like, Tyler.
Yeah, exactly. But then I'm like, no, I was like, all right, there's still, like, you know, I still got a little bit of time. Well, for some reason, my, you know, it's most of the time the cameras are touchscreen.
Yeah.
So I'm like trying to delete stuff. Well, for whatever reason, my touchscreen isn't working. So I'm like trying to like figure out how to delete all this like old footage without, you know, without a touchscreen to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm like fumbling around. I'm like, all right, there, I got some deleted. Hopefully that's enough. Like, I have no idea how much record time I have left on there. I'm just like, okay. So I'm filming them. And, you know, like, I film them for a little bit. Turn the camera, you know, stop recording. And then start recording again. And then finally, they get to about, you know, like 60 yards or whatever. And the clean time just basically commits. He's like, all right, I'm going to that pile.
Yep.
And he comes in. So we get rewind a little bit, actually, because before they came in, I had a possum come in, and he was at the bait pond. No big deal. And I didn't realize this at the time, but when they came out, the possum was still there. So clean time basically commits to come into the bait pond. And then he sees, when you watch the footage, he sees the possum. And he's basically like, all right, yeah, whatever, get out of here.
Yep.
So Split G2 and the other smaller buck are trailing behind him and don't see this possum. So in my head, you know, Split G2 one is the one I really wanted. Just yep. because the history of him, he's older, he's bigger. It's just, you know, the way it is. But I've also played this process out in my head. If for some stupid reason something happens, I will shoot that clean 10 before I'll let both of them get away.
Because he still would be your biggest buck, right?
Yeah, he's still 160-inch deer.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not to that point where I'm going to pass 160-inch deer. So the clean 10 comes in, sees the possum, whatever, no big deal, comes right in, and he's just sitting there eating at the pile. I'm just sitting there waiting for the Split G2, like, okay, like just waiting on him. He's kind of making his way in. Little buck gets in between the two, and Split G2 is at like 30 yards, but he's facing straight on. So I told myself beforehand, like, if they come in, I'm going to have all the time in the world. Don't rush your shot.
Yeah.
Like, don't rush things. So I'm just sitting there waiting for the right time to draw, just being patient. Next thing I know, this little buck wigs out or starts wigging out and getting out of there. So then Split G2 starts wigging out a little bit and trying to get out of there. At that point, I'm like, all right, I'm drawing, you know, because their focus is elsewhere. I was like, all right, so I drew.
So are they wigging out because of the possum?
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know this at the time until I watched the footage back. So at the time, I'm like, I have no idea why they're wigging out. I'm like, well, what's going on, you know, type thing. And so Split G2 was probably around 40 yards, but, you know, he's kind of trying to get out of there. So in my head, I'm going, okay, I'm not going to try to stop alert deer and guess yardage and try to make a shot.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, well, I got clean 10 right here at the bait fall at 25 yards, chip shot. I'm not letting this opportunity slip through.
Yep.
So I ended up pinwheeling him and watched him go down. You know, he ran pretty much about to where they crossed the fence and ended up tipping over in the field.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, so geez, oh Pete's. I mean, what the heck? Now,
yeah.
What this clean 10 or whatever. So he's, first of all, I guess, what did he tape out at?
Just 160 on the dot.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so how big's the G2 buck then?
Oh god, it's the bad part is he makes this one look like a little bitch. So this year he ended up breaking off his G2 right where it would start to split.
Okay.
So, but we knew.
So he'd score like 172 instead of 175.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, he's definitely 170s, and he's like, you know, he like said he's either 6 or 7, or we're not 100% sure how old he is, but it's like you're comparing a 170, you know, easily 170-inch deer that's 6 or 7 years old to a 160-inch deer.
Right.
That's 4 or 5. So, yeah, he makes him look like a little bitch, but...
Oh, my gosh. So, I watched the video. So, if anybody wants to see this hunt, it's all videoed. It's on the Rise Hunt's YouTube channel. So, go to the Rise Hunt and watch Nick's hunt. It's segment 7. So, like, you were jacked. You know, I mean, this is... You killed your... I mean, let's be honest. 160-inch deer, for a vast majority of the hunters out there, is a deer of a lifetime. Like, that is a stud of a deer. And I mean, you were ecstatic. I love seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, you can literally hear the emotion in my voice. Like, is yeah, I was jacked on this one.
you went little schoolgirl on everybody. Like, yeah, that's what you, I do the same thing too.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome, man. That's so cool that, you know. You have history with those deer all basically most of the year, and then you know you play your cards right. You just grind it out. You stick to the game plan. I mean, you were gonna steer a little bit from it just because of until you found out the farmer's just a little maybe not the guy you want to approach, but you know you stuck to the game plan. You made it work, and that's awesome.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can say is you know it's like that's just for persistence. You know, keep trying it. You know, keep going, keep pushing it. I mean, I could have been like anyone else, like, oh, they're not showing up in daylight. I'm not gonna go there.
Yeah.
So that is literally the very first time that I have any intel of them showing. I mean, granted, they may have been, or there was two times where the clean 10 was out there during the muzzleloader season where he daylighted. But other than that, like, as far as I'm showing up there in the bowl range and everything like that, that is the very first time, and I happen to be there at that very, that one time.
Yep. And that's crazy to think, too. It's like, you know, what got those deer up that much earlier? Like, what do you think? Like, in your head, what was like, well, why was today the day?
I don't know. I mean, it's weird. Like, so like I said, it's cattle pasture in between me and their bedding. And even there's cows out there too. So when I climb up in that stand, I see them cows every time. They work their way up to the house and whatever. When I climbed up in that stand that night, them cows were all the way in the back of the cattle pasture. I'm like, kind of in my head, I'm thinking like, why are they all the way back there? When normally by the time I get in the stand, they're halfway up to the house. So
right.
I'm like, what's the reasoning of them being out there feeding later? Which animals have some sort of sense or whatever it is to, you know, trigger when they need to get feed more or whatever it is. So it kind of was running through my head. I'm like, wonder why. And then that possum come out earlier too, and I'm like, why is he out right now type thing. And
right,
it's just kind of all these things where it's like animals know. And I just was kind of like trying to like think in my head like, okay, maybe all this is just coincidence, or maybe this is actually something that maybe these deer will get up and move a little bit earlier. And it was, you know, like I said, it was kind of that wet, miserable, misty snow type thing. It made it feel cooler than it actually was. And I don't know. I'm not 100% sure why it was, but.
Did you ever go back and look at, like, if it was a moon phase or, you know, or pressure was rising or anything? Like, did you look at any of that?
No, I really didn't. And it was just pretty much that once I killed him, I was like, well, he's dead now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just, awesome, you know, man.
Yeah, he was dead, and I was just soaking it all in.
Yep. Well, congratulations, dude. That's freaking sweet. 2 years in a row, January bucks. Now, that was like kind of same thing with your Missouri deer too, right? Last year.
So the Missouri one was that it was a weird one because, I mean, I killed him at 3:30 in the afternoon, which, you know, late season like that, when it's 45 degrees, it was 45 degrees out too.
Yep.
I mean, that's what actually, so when you killed your bucks and you said one time it was warm and then the other time it was miserable cold.
Yeah. So the first year was, it was like the 4 days leading up to the day I killed him, it was miserable cold. Like, I mean, wear three neck gaiters and like you're like, you look like the Michelin man. It was so cold, almost cold where it's like, if I wouldn't have drove 10 hours to get here, I wouldn't be hunting cold. And we moved the stand. And there was snow on the ground the whole week and just, I mean, just frigid. And when we were driving to that stand the day that I killed him, like all day it was sunny. It was, I honestly think it was low 60s or high 50s. And all the snow had like basically melted. And there was just little patches of snow in the timber and got in the stand. I literally went from looking like the Michelin man to wearing basically what you would wear late October, early November, like, you know, athletic kind of feeling clothes. You know, it's like, oh, we're good here. You know, it's wear a ball cap. You don't have to wear a stocking cap on it. It's like, good. You know, and this deer, we weren't in the stand long and he showed up. We might have been in the stand an hour and he showed up. So he was like 2 hours before dark. They're going to feed, you know, and it was just like that trigger, like the cold to warm. It was crazy. So.
No, so on that one, you guys were just, you're hunting that transition zone between the bedding and feeding?
Yep, so, but we were butted right up to the food. So, because the reason why, so like if you can picture the timber, the neighbors had the food, and the property line was our timber. And there was probably a stretch of, I'd say probably 200 yards of timber, but we were on, like basically right on the property line. And the reason being is because there was a finger of timber, of our timber, that came out into, like jutted out into their field. And I wanted to see if the deer were using that. So if we had to make another move, like if they were coming out of that little valley into that little finger, then we could make a move into there. So that it was kind of an observation, but like could happen kind of stand.
So you're just in a way trying to eliminate process, going, you know, backing your way in without just blowing them out.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, it's crazy. Like you said, I mean, 1 year you can go from one extreme to the next.
Yeah. And that's so cool about it too, because it's like, you know, after I killed that deer, I was like, man, I asked myself, is like, was this a trigger? Like, you know, usually it's like cold front, cold front, cold front. Mm-hmm. But what if it's like cold, 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 and then it warms up? And in that scenario, it worked. I don't know if that would have happened in October. You know, if that would have been like cold, 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 and it warms, I don't know that. But in late season, when it was frigid like that, I mean, we saw deer that week when it was really cold, but you could just see it was like somebody had them in a cattle pasture with a gate closed, and they just opened the gate, and there's here they come. It was literally, it kind of felt like that. It didn't happen like that, but it kind of felt like that. So
now, what was your guys' food source that you said for that year?
Winter wheat. It was all winter green. Wheat. Yep, it was all okay. Green. It was just, you know, just planted that year, and it was all, like, they were just hitting a green source.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, 'cause I've never really had much. I mean, winter wheat's great food source, but I've never really had a whole lot of luck on it as far as deer pounding it hard.
Yep.
During the late season. But if you had the warm-ups, I'd, like, for whatever reason, get on the greens during that late season.
Yep.
I mean, that's where like, I feel like your brassicas and turnips and all those food plots that everyone's doing.
Yep.
I feel like those really shine, especially, you know, when you have the warm-ups. And especially, though, I mean, it seems the last few years, we really haven't been getting that brutal cold weather and snow and everything like that. So those plots have really been shining the last couple of years, it seems like.
For sure. And, like, the year after that, when I had an encounter with the deer I killed, it was on standing. We left some of the corn standing, but it was a cut corn field. We left some of it standing, and it was cold. And I went to grain and cold, and then the year before I went to green and killed. But you know what I mean. So it's like, that's kind of, I've always heard Mark Drew say that for a long time. You know, when it's cold, go to grain. When it's warm, go to green. And you know, it's just, that has held true, honestly, in any scenario I've had.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's what the one I killed last year. Those, we hunted a clover plot. I mean, it was 45 degrees and it was windy, and I was like, all right, let's go down some green down low in the bottom. We'll get out of that wind. And I mean, it, like I said, 3:30, we were freaking tagged out.
Yep.
It was like, you know, and I mean, obviously we were, you know, had to have been tight close to his bedding, but
right,
you know, for him to show up that early. But it's like I said, you know, even the day before, we weren't even climbing into stand until 3:30.
Yep.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah, I need to hunt with you more.
I don't know where this lucky rabbit foot came from, but I'm gonna hang on to it for a couple more years if I can.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. Hold on to that thing for as long as you can.
Yeah. This year, I figured it kind of wore off after October 2nd this year, because, like I said, I killed that one. I went all this time. I'm like, you know, I was seeing good deer. I was seeing good deer, but it was literally the story of the year was, oh, there he is, 200 yards. Oh, there he is, 300 yards. I mean, throughout the whole season, I kept seeing, you know, I'd see the good bucks, but to keep me motivated, but it was just like, man, I can't get them in close enough.
Right.
And then when I had a gun, they weren't even show up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's cool to be able to have a consistent win like that, you know, weekend after weekend, because like you said, you're a weekend warrior in it. You know, you only had the weekends, and to have a consistent win that you could hunt that one stand, and that just goes to show you, like, a couple things. Let's say this: you just killed 160 inch deer off a bait pile, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, a lot of people say you can't kill big deer off bait piles. Like, it can happen. You know, it can very well happen in free range. But, like, another thing is, too, like, being able to hunt one stand time after time after time, if you do it the right way, you did your homework. You know, you didn't push the fact. You entered and exited the right way. It's like you covered up your tracks, basically. Did it the right way, and you got it done. So that was cool to see, too.
Yeah, no, it's like every time I would go in there, I would get more nervous and more nervous too, because like you said, a lot of times when you go, you know, a lot of times it proves that the first time in the stand is the best time.
Yep.
And so the more I hunted it, the more I worried, you know, I was like, man, the more pressure I'm putting on it, the more scent I'm leaving behind.
Right.
And it's just, you know, I started to worry more and more and more every weekend.
Yep.
And then the stars aligned on this one. Like I said, you know, it's like there wasn't much wind that night, but they circled the downwinds, all downwind side of me and everything like that. And still, you know, when it's your time, it's your time. I don't care. You could do everything wrong, but somehow it's going to come together type of thing.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. That's good words right there, because, you know, it's, I killed a pretty good buck here, not to relish on my stuff, but I killed a pretty good buck here. In 2015 in Michigan, and that deer, for some odd reason, he came into me right underneath my tree and hit my wind and started to loop. And when he looped, he came back into my wind, and he was at 18 yards completely downwind, did not care that I was even there. And it was like a 12-mile-an-hour wind, I think. It's kind of a gusty night. Did not even care. I mean, luckily I was still at full draw, ready to go, and I just had to stop him. But like when I stopped him, he didn't bug out, nothing. Completely downwind. And, you know, zipped him, and he was, you know, I'm looking at him now. But I mean, it's just like you said, like, you know, sometimes those, maybe the deer let their guard down or something, or I don't know.
That's one thing I was kind of thinking too, is for how consistent he was showing, they were showing up there, is they were just, every time they were showing up, they're building that comfort too.
For sure.
I mean, if they're showing up that much, they're just getting more comfortable, more comfortable, more comfortable.
Yep. I got a question for you. So how much were you baiting? Like when you were going into the stand, was that when you were putting stuff out, or were you making more trips back there?
So right off the get-go, we went in there, and basically I had my Polaris Ranger down there. We filled up the bed full of ear corn.
Yep.
Dumped the bed of ear corn, and then I was using White Gold Berry Blast, and I'll dump Berry Blast on top of the ear corn.
Yep.
Well, that was fine until they started wiping that out in literally less than 2 weeks.
Right.
Because they were just awesome. They're like, oh, here's easy food. And they just started hammering it.
Okay.
And so I figured, you know, doing that, I was like, oh, this is plain enough. It'll last a while. No, that's not the case. And literally, it came down to about every 2 weeks, I was having to refresh it up, is what it boiled down to. And, you know, I'd go back in there on the four-wheeler or something along those lines. And I just so happened, the day before I killed him, I went in there, I did an extra trip in there, and, you know, and spread, you know, put more bait out there, and then they came in the next day.
I got you.
So it was about every 2 week thing. It was an extra trip in there, but I tried doing it on the four-wheeler or something along those lines. And I would literally try my absolute best not to put a foot on the ground.
I got you. Just keep the ground scent down as much as you can.
Yeah.
Do you ever shut the four-wheeler off or just leave it run the whole time?
Nope. Left to run the whole time, try to get in and out of there as quick as I could.
Yep.
I'd go in there at, like, you know, midday, whatever time.
Yep.
So, but I feel like, you know, certain deer, I mean, obviously, it's get very deer to deer, but most of them will kind of translate that as, like, farmer.
For sure.
Something along those lines. Sure. And, you know, I've literally, like, I chased that, or the one buck I was chasing here this year, the very first time I laid eyes on this year, I was sitting in the stand, and farmer comes out, chisel paw in the field. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, hurry, you know, maybe he'll hurry up and get out of here. Gets out of the field, comes back in, starts spreading line. I'm like, oh, now we're really screwed. No, it wasn't even, that farmer didn't even get out of sight by the time he was done spreading the line. Awesome. Like, you know, this would be my biggest buck. At the time, he would have been my biggest buck too. And he pops out 5 minutes later. Jeez. So it's like, you know, tractors and everything like that, people always just like, oh, well, I'm not going to see nothing. Farmers out here chisel upon the field or, count, you know, whatever. It's like, dumb deer, they're just so used to.
Yep.
They're not really putting a threat. You know, they're not feeling threatened with all that, you know.
Yeah, and they're around that farm stuff all the time, all year, basically.
Yeah.
Yep. How big was your Michigan deer?
135.
That's a great deer, man.
135 and some change, yeah.
Great buck, man. Well, congratulations on a hell of a year. Another great year to you, man.
No, thank you. I mean, I'd rather be lucky than good any day.
There you go. There you go. Well, cool, man. I appreciate you coming on and doing this. I'm going to cut you loose here. We're about at an hour, and thanks again, man.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. All right, there you have it. Another great episode. Nick Cohealy, thank you very much for coming on, man. I appreciate it. It's always a good time cutting up with him and the guys from the Rise Hunt. So, that was the story. I mean, it's an unbelievable story. Goes down there late season. Like I said, he took this thing all the way into end of January and was able to get it done. But really cool. And honestly, I'm going to kind of preempt next week's episode a little bit. I actually go down and meet with the Rise guys, you know, Tyler, Matt, Alex and Nick down at Tyler's house, and we actually cut another podcast, which is going to be next week's podcast. And not too long ago, I put out something on Instagram talking about Michigan hunting. What are some questions and what are some things that you do and don't like about it? That's what we cover on that episode. So that's going to be a good episode. We get into a lot of deep dive stuff just because we're all from Michigan. We've grown up here, hunted here our whole lives. So I think it'll be very enjoyable for the Michigan people to listen to. And I think there's some really cool information in there. And we cover a lot of questions that everybody sent in, and I really appreciate that. So that will be next week's episode. Thank you guys very much. If you can, go to iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, and leave a review. That'd be great. And with that being said, I'm going to cut this loose. Thank you guys very much, and we'll see you right here on the Fall Podcast next week.